Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2122, the release date of Friday, June 27, 2018, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Field day is gone. The World Radio Sport Team Championship looms large, and the International Space Station eyes new radios. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report 2122 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, here's Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
We open this week's newscast with a question. Are you ready for the World Radio Sport Team Championship? Ed Durant, DD5LP, found some people who are.
The WRTC 2018 is a family event. The Amateur Radio World Championship in Germany can attract whole families. Here's an example from Chemnitz. Rita Gerner, DG0EQ, her OM, Carsten Gerner, DG0JCG, were able to inspire their son, Tim, a shortwave listener, to volunteer with them to help on the WRTC. Rita and Carsten have been licensed since 1992 and participate in field days and other activities with their local club. The prospect of experiencing their field day atmosphere, which is always very enjoyable, at the World Championships was reason enough for the family to apply to help out as a team. Rita and Tim Gerner look after the competitors. Carsten Gerner assumes the coordinating role of the so-called site manager and said, "In the club, we spoke extensively, once the venue was announced, about how we could help. You have to be part of a world championship when it takes place in your own country. That was very clear to us." Although the family team was prevented from attending the test days in the Wittenberg-Jessen region last year, they are looking forward to their tasks in July. "It's going to be a great experience and we'll do everything we can to make sure competitors and referees feel comfortable on our site," says Rita. "And getting to know the best contesters in the world and being able to look over their shoulders will be really great," said a delighted Carsten. Tim Gerner, who caught the radio bug as an SWL, is still in the stress of exams at school, but soon will complete a course for his ham license. "Creating the best conditions for the competition teams was one of the most important tasks in the entire organisation. The organising team also wanted to offer opportunities to around 370 helpers that they gain new experiences and meet interesting people." For Amateur Radio Newsline, this has been Ed Durand, DD5LP.
It's been a big season for ham radio gatherings and amateurs on the Pacific Northwest. Just had one of their own, as we hear from Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
Add to the list of large successful amateur radio gatherings this year, CPAC. Held at the Seaside Convention Center in Oregon, it is billed as the Northwestern United States' largest ham convention. Delvin Bunton, NS7U, event chairman, said that by the time it concluded on June 2nd, more than 2,000 hams had come in from the Pacific Northwest, including Canada, as well as Nevada, Hawaii, Idaho, Connecticut, and even Great Britain. The event kicked off with an all-day workshop on antenna modeling, as well as emergency communication and preparedness. The weekend seminars covered a range of subjects from the solar eclipse to nurturing your hometown club and helping it grow. The ARRL's division and section leaders attended from the Northwest Division's six sections. Looking to the future, CPAC-hosted guest speaker Steve Hicks, N5AC of Flex Radio Systems, at the Saturday night banquet. Two amateurs from the Northwest also landed in the spotlight as recipients of the Mickleyburg Memorial College Scholarship. They are Joseph Boyd Jr., KG7ULU, and Joseph Heil, KF7FME. The scholarship is provided each year by the Oregon Tualatin Valley Amateur Radio Club. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
In Melbourne, Australia, some students can't wait to get to class. Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, tells us why.
Students are known for asking tough questions. Just ask any teacher. In mid-July, however, some questions from kids at one Melbourne, Australia school can be expected to rise to a whole new level, more like 200 plus miles above the Earth. Where will they find the answers? Hopefully, aboard the International Space Station, where they'll be talking to the Essex Heights Primary School somewhere between July the 16th and the 22nd. The connection will be made via Telebridge, which involves an amateur radio ground station elsewhere, establishing the contact and then facilitating the conversation via phone patch. The school's website describes the occasion as both a school and a community event. So bring on those questions. Organisers have indicated that the astronaut addressing the curious youngsters is likely to be either Ricky Arnold, KE5DAU, or Serena Ornon-Chancellor, KG5TMT. No doubt the students are looking forward and looking up. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
To keep those space station communications open, new radios are needed, as we hear from Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
The current amateur radio equipment on the International Space Station dates back to the year 2000, and after 18 years and conditions the designers never originally considered, components are beginning to fail. The biggest problem is that you can't just pop up there on a Saturday morning after breakfast to fix or replace the gear, because it's 250 miles straight up, moving at 17,200 miles per hour. However, the amateur radio on the International Space Station Organization, or ARIS, is working on new gear that will be flown up to the ISS beginning later this year. I spoke with Dave Taylor, W8AAS, who is the U.S. Operations Manager for ARIS, about what's been happening.
Right now, all we have is the Kenwood and the Russian module, and that was not originally set up as ARIS equipment, but belongs to the Moscow Aviation Institute, and they've been using that for various tests. People have seen their MAI SSTV experiments from time to time, and we use that for our voice contact with the schools.
Taylor said that getting the packet digipeater back on the air is the first priority. The existing packet module has failed, and attempts at remote troubleshooting have been unsuccessful.
We were able to come up with another copy of the packet module. It was built at the same time, so it dates back to 2000. We replaced the backup battery in it, did some tests, it's still working. And because it is identical to what was up there, paperwork is minimal. Minimal is still a lot, but it's a lot less than it would have taken if it was new hardware.
Next will be a replacement for the primary radio system in the U.S. module, says Taylor.
Interoperable radio system is going to be a customized Kenwood TM-D710 unit. Kenwood donated the radio and also a lot of software design and engineering time to modify the hardware and the software specifically to ARIS needs. So we will have that radio and a HEM-designed multi-voltage power supply, which will supply the Kenwood radio. It will provide power for the HEM-TV and several other things that we might want to do in the future.
For many hams, myself included, ARIS combines two passions into one, space exploration and amateur radio.
It's hard to say how cool it is to stand outside at night and watch the space station go over and listen to it at the same time.
If you wish to donate or just want more information, please visit their website at www.ariss.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
The space station also made news recently for another reason. Here's Ed Durant, DD5LP.
Europeans were experiencing some space QRM in late June. No, it wasn't from Mars or Jupiter or even the Sun. It came from the International Space Station. Operators across Europe heard English and Spanish stations on the 2-meter FM calling frequency of 145.5 megahertz. Was this some special tropo propagation that lasted in bursts of 10 to 15 minutes? But why didn't the stations respond to calls? What happened was that after testing some yet-to-be-launched satellites inside the ISS, the Kenwood transceiver was left on in cross-band repeater mode and somehow had been set to 145.5 rather than the usual 145.8 MHz output frequency. It went unnoticed, except by a few avid ISS followers who happily used it for a couple of days until it was turned off by the astronauts.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6CDW repeater at Lake Elsinore Peak in California on Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. local time. CW enthusiasts are no stranger to the name Jack Curtis or his eponymous Curtis Morris Keyer chip. The man who gave hams a new way to key Morris code has become a silent key. Here's Andy Morrison, K9AWM, with more.
The radio amateur who revolutionized CW keyers with the use of an IC chip has become a silent key. Jack Curtis, K6KU, formerly W3NSJ, was the father of the Curtis-Morse Keir chip, reshaping the way keying could be done with the use of memory. His first chip, known as 8043, was released in 1973, followed by a series of others, ending with a 20-pin chip in 1986. The 20-pin chip incorporated A or B iambic modes and an output for a speed meter. His chips found their way from commercial keyers into commercial amateur rigs and were popular in homebrew projects as well. The Pennsylvania native and electrical engineer worked for Sperry Rand and later Corning Glass after serving in the Navy. His side business, Curtis Electro Devices, was founded to market his Morse code iambic keyer and later provide memory chips for the emerging cellular industry. The company closed in 2000. At the time of his death on June 4th, he was a resident of Granite Bay, California. Jack Curtis was 87. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
Although Field Day attracted lots of attention in North America, some operators were busy working field night, as Mike Askins, KE5CXP, tells us.
For many hams in North America, Field Day is part Olympics, part emergency drill, and part camping adventure. It's an annual exercise that also raises our hobby's public profile. In Cicero, in upstate New York, local officials recognized the Liverpool Amateur Radio Club, W2CMX, operating at William Park, and the city of Goose Creek, South Carolina, proclaimed Amateur Radio Week. So many hundreds of hams worked out of the spotlight on June 23rd and 24th, however. Among them, Howard Bernstein, WB2UZE of the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club, was among thousands working the late night and overnight shifts. As we await results, Howard reminds us that hams are known for losing sleep when they're needed.
Great South Bay was short of CW operators because a couple of their very experienced contest operators couldn't make it this year. And there are actually three CW positions and actually a fourth if you consider that the VHF position is there too. You know, there's 6 meters where you could send CW. And they have to be covered. So I stayed as long as I possibly could without really losing my attention. So it's not so much that I wanted to stay at that hour, but I felt that I had to.
Thanks to all the hams who participated, especially those in the off hours. For Field Day updates, keep listening. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5CXP.
Get ready for a winter event from Australia that promises a lesson in sub-Antarctic history. Here's John Williams, VK4JJW.
Australian amateurs are using the call sign VI70MI to mark 70 years since the establishment of the first Australian National Antarctic Research Expedition radio station on Macquarie Island. They're getting on the air from the Australian mainland, however, not taking a trip to the sub-Antarctic island. The call sign, however, recognises the first radio communication station commissioned on the island on the 21st of March in 1948. That came just months after Australia had established the very first of its sub-Antarctic stations on Heard Island the previous December. Macquarie Island Station allowed expeditioners to spend the winter there and stay connected with the world they left behind, thanks to radio. Presently, there's only one active operator on the island, Norbert VK0AL. Unlike Heard Island, there have been no de-expeditions so far to Macquarie Island. So, if you want to get in on the action without going to any sub-Antarctic extremes, be listening for VI70MI from hams on the Australian mainland until the 31st of August. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
In the world of DX, we remind you that Baker Island De-Expedition is on the air with four stations. Be listening for the KH1/KH7Z team, which has been heard on 160 CW, 40 CW and SSB, and 20 SSB. Pay special attention to 60 meters, where operators expect to be very active. The KH1/KH7Z frequency plan is on the De-Expedition website. The hams will be operating split. Be listening for Dominic, ON4AZP, who is operating holiday style from Senegal, as 6W/ON4AZP. He will be on the air until July 5th. Find him on SSB on 10, 15, 20, and 40 meters. QSL to his home call. You can find Ole, KD7WPJ, operating between July 2nd and July 4th from Santa Rosa Island. Ole will be primarily on 50 megahertz using FT8, CW, and SSB, but will also have some CW QRP operations on IOTA frequencies. To QSL Direct, please send funds to his Livermore address to cover mailing expenses. Daniel, SM0UDH, is in the Maldives through the 9th of July and is activating holiday style as 8Q7DT on SSB and data. QSLs go via his home call. Antonio EA5RM is in Bolivia until the 10th of July using the call sign CP1XRM. He can be found on 40 to 10 meters SSB and data. QSL via his home call sign and also LOTW. For One Ham in England, a charity road rally to Spain turned into a mobile activation as we hear from Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
When James Priest, M0JFP, a member of the Chertsey Radio Club, set out with friends on a 1,400-mile four-day charity drive from Dover in the UK to Benidorm in Spain recently, he and his fellow travellers had hopes for great fundraising possibilities for the local Chertsey Children's Hospital. They also took with them a Yaesu FT-857 and an SPX-200 multiband HF antenna borrowed from Moonraker UK Limited. In keeping with the spirit of the charity rally, they drove an old Vauxhall Vectra fitted with stickers and flags and other trappings on the theme of pirate radio, in a mobile tribute to Radio Caroline and Radio Luxembourg. Their destination was Benidorm or Bust, the title given to the main event to benefit women and children's services there. It featured nearly 200 decorated older cars, fellow travellers all driving for the main cause, but also supporting those nearer and dearer to home. The rally left town on the 12th of June with road and ferry crossings still ahead. Operating as both M0JFP and using the US call sign Whiskey Oscar 2I, James logged contacts into the UK, Germany and France along the way whenever possible. He said that as a smaller team within the larger rally, the pirate radio run raised several £100 for the children's ward of Ashford and St Peter's Hospital. Having logged all those contacts and all those miles, James told Amateur Radio Newsline in an email that it was one of those experiences he'd never forget. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
With thanks to Allen Labs, Amateur News Weekly, ARIS, the ARRL, Chertsey Radio Club, CQ Magazine, Delvin Bunton, NS7U, George DeWar, VY2GF, Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, Irish Radio Transmitter Society, James Priest, M0JFP, Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, QRZNow.com, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, Wireless Institute of Australia, WTWW Shortwave, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB in Wadsworth, Ohio, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2018, all rights reserved.